Good morning. It's good to see you this morning. We are so glad you're here. As Roger mentioned, we're starting in on a new series, a new sermon series, and a corresponding class series, A Church on the Move, Church in a Changing World. It's going to be an important conversation for us as a church, and we really want you to be a part of that. And I'm asking you to be in prayer over that and to be in prayer over me and over us. And as Roger also said, this is a series that has been put together in collaboration, that everything that I'm doing has been done in collaboration and at the instruction of the elders. And so this is really a group conversation that's taking place, and we look forward to this, and we look forward to you being a part of that and joining us in that. So here's what we all know. The world around us is constantly changing. In some of the ways it's changing, we like and we embrace and we love, and there's ways that it's changing that we don't always like and we don't always embrace and we don't always love. And then there's all kinds of ways that it's changing that we're still not sure what we think, because it's always changing. And what we also recognize is, in a church of this size, we may not always land in the exact same places as to what we think about the change. Some like it, some don't like it, some are still figuring out, I don't know, do I like it, do I not like it, I'm not sure. So here's what this series is about in a big picture view. This series is about developing hearts that, as Jesus says, are always asking, always seeking, always knocking for God to give us deeper understanding, deeper faith, deeper love in action, and compassion for this world around us that is always changing. It is a series about learning again, rediscovering our core principles, so that if, when, whether change takes place around us or within us or among us, that we hold on to faith, and not only that our faith endures, but that our faith continually grows in the process. That we want a faith that lasts regardless of what is happening all around us. And we also want a faith that we can pass on to the next generation. We want to set things up so that the next generation can thrive in faith. And we want to be the kind of church that can pass on the faith to those around us who don't yet know Jesus, and that we can connect with the community around us. So part of what this means is, and let me tell you right at the beginning, this series is not about particular decisions that we're trying to make at the end of 4 or 5 weeks, which is too short, nor about particular decisions we've already made and we're just going to spring them on you at the end. There is an elder selection process. Start praying about that. And there is also going to be an elder reaffirmation process. So our elders want to put themselves up for reaffirmation for you as a church to say either yes or no. We want to continue to see them serve in this capacity. And I love that openness that they've said we don't see being an elder as a lifetime appointment. We want to serve at the instruction, at the affirmation of the church. But this series is about the types of questions that every church has to ask if we want to fulfill our calling to love God and love one another and love the world that God loves. And it's about the types of discussions that every church has to have and is having if we want to live as a unified family in the midst of diversity. And this series is less about the specifics of what we might do, but it is very much about the spirit that guides everything that we do. What is at the heart of who we are? what drives us, what compels us, what fuels our compassion to live out the ways of God in our ever-changing world. So here's what you're going to also notice in this series. Almost every Sunday, besides the time when I preach, one of our elders is going to come up and share just a little bit and cast a bit of a vision. And so this morning, Kent Westbrook is going to come up. And Dr. Westbrook, as many of you know, but some of you may not know, has been here from the very beginning, one of the founding members of this church in helping inform this church and get it together. And he's going to share for a few minutes about the spirit of love and grace and welcome that has always forged the identity of this church from the beginning.
Thank you, Bert. I'm a Christian. I attend Chenal Valley Church, and I'm proud of it. For 70 years, I have attended a Church of Christ. The first 30 years or so, it was kind of the Church of Christ. As time has gone by, I've recognized that the church I attended wasn't the only Church of Christ, that there are other Church of Christ within our brotherhood, and there are churches of Christ scattered throughout the world. I studied hard when I was young to try to learn exactly what was right in religion. I would go to church, I would go to Sunday school. While the preacher was preaching, I'd get a book out of the library and sit in the back and read continuously while he preached. And then when I was young, my mind could separate. I could understand what he was saying, and I could understand what I was reading. So I was searching for it, thus saith the Lord in everything. And I looked at the history of the Restoration Movement. Great men, Barton Stone, Alexander Campbell, and they really sought for two different things. They sought for unity in Christianity, and they sought for purity in their theology. As time went by, though, that desire for purity in the theology caused them to differ on many issues. And as a result, the Church of Christ splits and splits and splits. There have been two new Churches of Christ in Little Rock in the last year. So as the time went by, I saw various issues come up in the church that had to be dealt with. Single cup, no Sunday school, no money to the orphan's home, no kitchen in the building, no dancing, no movies, you know, just lots of different things. And I realized that sometimes the church has not come down on the right side of issues. During the Civil War, most churches of Christ supported slavery. When women were seeking the vote 100 years ago, most churches of Christ opposed the vote for women. So we haven't always been on what I consider to be the right side. What I want to do today is to present my ideas about the Chenal Valley Church as a circle of love. And when conflict has come about in the church, next slide, frequently we have been told to circle the wagons, hunker down, and that works sometimes. Next slide. But sometimes you wind up without enough wagons as people bail out. So we have to learn how to deal with conflict or with change. So the question comes up, why do we do what we do in religion? Why do you do what you do? Why do I do what I do? A lot of it is tradition. Now in tradition, I include what we've been taught and what we believe the Bible to say. So tradition, when I say it, I mean wider than just tradition. It also depends on what we have learned individually by studying the Bible, because we can't just take what someone tells us. We've got to study and develop our own faith and our own religion. Then as we go through life, we have experiences, and those experiences reinforce some things we've learned, and they make us question things we learned. The culture we live in also affects why we do what we do. This congregation, next, would not be here if it were not for Danny Burleson. He was our first minister. He was a great friend of mine. He and I fished together, and we did lots of things together. In my class this morning, I told one story about Danny, and I will tell it very briefly. Danny and I were going fishing one day, and he came out to go, and he had on a straw hat and Bermuda shorts. And he wanted to stop at Walmart and get some new fishing lures. So we stopped over in North Little Rock at Walmart. He says, "I'll be back in 5 minutes." Well, Danny knew everyone everywhere. And that was part of his ministry, was to reach out to everyone wherever they were. I sat there for about 30 minutes waiting on him to come out of Walmart. Well, he came out and he got in, you know, as if nothing had happened. Because when you were waiting on Danny, it wasn't nearly as critical as when Danny was waiting on you. So he got in, and I said, "Well, Danny, you've got to call the state police." Danny was a chaplain in the state police. And Danny said, "Why is that, Kent?" He said, I said, "I called in an Amber Alert on you, Danny." I said, "I called the police and said that little Danny Burleson was missing, that he was 6'5", had on a straw hat and Bermuda shorts. So why don't you call in and cancel it?" But Danny believed in these two things that I show here. It's not what you've done, it's what you're doing. We believe, and that was kind of the rationale for this congregation. We accepted people where they were. If they had gone through divorce, if they had gone through addiction, if they had gone through various things, they were welcome here because we're all sinners and different people have different sins. So it wasn't what you've done, it's what you're doing. It wasn't where you've been, it's where you're going. The first person that was baptized at the Chenal Valley Church came from jail for his baptism. He had murdered his wife. That was proven in courts. And we baptized him in a vat that we got and brought up there. From the very beginning, women were very involved in our church here. The first board of directors, and we had a board of directors for a long time before we had elders. There were two women on our board of directors, Linda Thompson and Sarah Jewett, and they were a very important part of what we did and why we did it. So principles that Danny set out were judge not. That was one of the big things that he said and one of the things we have always emphasized. Another was to become, as Paul says, all things to all people. Meet people where they are. Try to bring them to the Lord from wherever they are. So the goal was to lead people to God, and that's still our goal. Next slide. Edwin Markham said, if I can read it, "He drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in." So one of the things that we emphasized from the beginning was within the realms of reason, draw bigger circles, bring people in. Next. And this is an example of one circle that shuts someone out and a big circle that brings them in. Next. I think one of my favorite passages in the Bible is Matthew 11:28. This is King James Version. I don't use it very often, but it's the one most of us grew up with. I think this passage is prettier in the King James than it is in any of the others. "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Christ was calling up people, and he calls people today from a hard life, not just a life of physical hard, but he was calling them from religious hardness. They were burdened down with numbers of rules and laws under the Jewish law. So Christ is saying, "I'm calling you from a tough religion that demands things of you that you can't do to an easier religion." So I think we want people to understand that it's probably easier to be a Christian than not to be a Christian. Next. So, in summary, what I want for Chenal Valley is that we continue to draw circles. We may have to draw bigger circles. They may have to be of a different shape. But as we draw these circles, we want to include as many people as we can. Now, in today's world, there are always issues that we're going to have to deal with. The basic principle of this congregation is to accept others, don't judge, and help people to come to God. If we believe in those principles, then we can deal with issues of what's right and wrong in society, what role women should have in the church, whether we should have instrumental music, what role, how we should handle different races in the church. Just as an aside, I grew up in a congregation where black people could come, but they had to sit on the back and they were served the Lord's Supper after everyone else. That's wrong. That's wrong. So the thing I want us to emphasize is that we have got to continue to be inclusive. Christ was inclusive. He included everyone, the poor, the sinners, the rich, everyone. And we've got to be an inclusive congregation, and may God bless us as we go forward and try to accomplish that. And the church said, amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Westbrook. Okay, I'm going to do something that's a little bit of a change of pace from that, but it's going to lead us into our text, and what I'm going to do is a little abbreviated this morning in case you're worried when I'm getting up. But what I'm doing right now is exercise, and you don't have to shout it out with me, but I want you to try to answer it in your head if you can, and you'll see the exercise on the screen behind me. Okay, we're going to start simple. 613 plus 2 is, you got it? All right, 613 minus 2 is, you got it? It's going to get a little more complicated. 613 times 2 is, okay, very good. 613 divided by 2 is, okay, this one's a little harder. I could do this one in my head, but you may struggle with it. The square root of 613 is, okay, I would have accepted either, who cares, or 24.758836. And again, I did the rest. It all just popped into my head. But I understand if it would take you a little while. Okay, there's one more, and this one is multiple choice. I want you to pick the one that you think is right, and there's four potential answers, so you got a 50-50 chance. Are you with me? I'm just making sure you're with me. I may have lost you because my math was off on that, but none of you reacted. Okay, here we go. 613A, 613 is greater than 2. B, 2 is greater than 613. C, 613 equals 2. Or D, all of the above. What do you think the answer is? Okay, so you already know. This one's kind of a trick question, right? Because mathematically, we all know that A is the right answer. But if you look through Scripture, if you read through the New Testament, then you'll start to see that there's some interesting math that takes place in the New Testament. Some of you may be aware of this, some of you may not be, but there's a reason why I landed on that number 613. By the first century, Jewish theologians had sorted through all the different Mosaic law, the Levitical law, the teachings of the Old Testament. And they said, of all of that, we think there's 613 that you really ought to focus on. Coming back to Kent's reading of the yoke is easy and your burden is light. So 613, that's all. And if you were faithful, and if you wanted to be faithful, then those were the ones you tried to lean in on. But it starts to beg the question, are all of them on equal footing? Are they all on par with one another? Do we treat them all the same? Do we think about them all the same? Or another question is there anything that rises to the top? Is there something that encapsulates all of these teachings? You may remember Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all describe an interaction between Jesus and a teacher of the law. And each one depicts the story a little bit differently, but they're all speaking to, alluding to the same thing. And I want to read the question posed by a teacher of the law in Mark chapter 12. Of all the commandments, he asks, which is the most important? The most important one, answered Jesus, is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And the second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment that is greater than these. In Matthew's telling of this, Jesus ends with this: All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. And in Luke's gospel, Jesus ends with this: Do this and you will live. And then he decides to tell a story of the Good Samaritan. Now, this idea is picked up in other parts of the New Testament. So Paul in Galatians 5:13 says, serve one another in love. The entire law is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. Or Paul says in Romans 13:8, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. Did you hear the math that was going on in those? Love sums up the law. Love equals all of the teachings of God. Love is greater than all the other commands. We like to make it complex. People like to make it complex. But God's math is really simple on this. If all we do, if how we spend our time, if how we spend our money, if how we use our resources, if how we use our talents, if in the end it doesn't come back to love, it doesn't add to love, it does not multiply love, then we've messed up the whole equation. My answer's wrong. I better track that thing back up to the source because something is off. If the answer every time doesn't end with love, loving God with all we are and loving neighbor as ourself, then we've missed the whole point. Or let me paraphrase Paul and what he says in the famous love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13, you know, the one quoted a lot at weddings. If you can do really impressive spiritual things, and you're really generous with your money, and you think you've got all the right spiritual answers, but you don't have love, which was an issue a lot for the Pharisees, then he says, you've got nothing. And you gain nothing. And all of that is worth nothing. So the spirit of this church, which was set long before I got here, but I've done everything I can to continue us along those paths, is a spirit defined by love, and here's a few ways that that manifests itself and that we want to continue to see, that I want to continue to see in this church. We want everything we do to come down to love, which means we are not going to be a church that majors in the minors, that gets caught up in the minutia of legalism instead of the big picture of love. We are not going to become distracted or divided over lesser things. And there are lesser things. And there are greater things. And then there is the greatest of things. And the greatest of these is love. We want the way we treat everyone to be defined by love. And when it is, love pushes us to grace and mercy and forgiveness and a wide welcome, and it pushes us away from judgmentalism and segregation. As Dr. Westbrook reminded us, a part of this church from the very beginning has been this notion, this idea: it does not matter where you come from. What matters is where you're going and where we're going, and that Jesus is our guide. And we will welcome you, whatever your starting point is. And the reality is, we all have different starting points. But if Christ is our guide, if we remain followers, which is what it means to be a disciple, to say, I will take up my cross and I will follow you. I will not stand still, but I will go where you go and I will do what you do. Then we will be a church that is always moving in ministry to meet one another and to meet the world around us. There is a saying that was a part of the Restoration Movement in the early days. And those who don't know, Churches of Christ came out of the Restoration Movement, again, as Dr. Westbrook reminded us. And this was a saying that this church latched on to long before I came. And the saying is this: wherever God, through the truth, may lead us. That's what it means to be followers. Wherever God, through the truth, may lead us. We want everything we do in regard to those who don't have faith to come from love. And that means getting outside of our bubbles, getting outside of our circles, getting outside of our comfort zones, and going to where people are. That means sometimes sacrificing our comforts in our preferences to meet people where they are. And we want everything we do in regard to the next generation to be dictated by love. We want to be a church where the generations can get together and discuss together and dream together and see where God is calling us. And every generation sees things a little differently and lands at some different places. And we want to create space for all of those voices to come together, because we believe when all of those voices come together, God forms in us and through us a beautiful chorus of love that the world can see and hear. And we want the ways that we treat and talk about all the other people doing the Jesus thing to be defined by love. So this church from the very beginning has said, we do not want to be a sectarian church. We want to recognize that God is so much bigger than us. And not only recognize it, but rejoice in it and celebrate it, and everywhere we can to join in that work. So you may or may not know, but this very day, this afternoon at 1 o'clock, there is another church that is going to use this sanctuary to worship. It is the new Pinnacle Church of Christ, who had a new building, and they just had a fire this week. And they're going to be out of their space maybe for a week, maybe for 2 weeks, maybe for 3 weeks. They don't know, and they needed a space. And we said, we got a space. We're not in competition. We want to cooperate in any way we can, because we love when others love Jesus. And some of you may know, I hope most of you know, but there was a small church that met here for 6 to 8 years. It was a group of Christians, mostly from Egypt, the Coptic Church. And they just finally got their own building, and they're now in their own building. But for 6, 7, 8 years, this small little church of 4, 5, 6 families would meet several times a month in our building. And I loved that they met here, because I love their love for Jesus. Even if it doesn't always look the exact same way as we express our love. As Jesus says, if they're not against us, they're for us. Why would you fight against that? Why not support that? And so this church has always been a church that has refused to be sectarian. Instead, we are going to celebrate God's work wherever it is seen. And we're going to join in when we can. And we want the way that we treat and talk to and about one another to come from love and be about love, both in places where we agree and in places that we disagree. And I realize that in our climate today, that seems almost impossible. Is it possible, we think, in many ways in our culture, to even have conversations, much less have all of our conversations come from love, be sprinkled with love, always be about love when we disagree with one another? And I would suggest to you that Jesus says not only is that possible, but it is expected. And he prays fervently that his people would find a unity bound through love in the face of diversity. And there will always be diversity, but what distinguishes us is not where we stand on particular issues, but do we stand in love. And love is what is going to describe us. Love is what is going to define us. Love is what is going to set the course for this church as we move forward. Programs come and go. And people come and go. And practices come and go. But loving God with all of our heart and our soul and our mind and our strength, and loving one another as if they were ourselves, that will never fail. And when it does, we've messed up the whole equation. It's time to get back to the greatest thing. And we close this morning in a song of adoration. We declare our love for Christ, who loved us and compels us in love.